created to have some fun together, sharing and singing. So, join and enjoy!
Our love for opera brings us together. Thanks for being with us in this trip.
Hello, hello again. I am so very happy that you're joining me today for another program. We are having a different series this time when we are talking about, and this here is Parlons d'eux, and today we are going to talk about one of the iconic representations, performances on a stage of the also very famous Aida by Maestro Giuseppe Verdi. Today is a very special program, not only because we are talking about this immense, absolutely incredible opera, but because in specific we are talking about that performance in Mexico City, 1951, over 70 years already, that the not so famous then, she was already working her way up, but we are going to talk about Maria Meneghini Callas. Still, she was not that famous level of, you know, for many people, Maria Callas has been one of the most amazing sopranos of all times. You may agree or you may not agree with that, but she was famous. And this representation in Mexico 1951 in Aida is one of the things that people who love opera, and more if you love Maria Callas, that you are aware of. Yeah, I will be giving more details in a few minutes. But today, Mexico City's 1951, Aida's in the Palacio de Bellas Artes. The Palacio de Bellas Artes is the most important stage in Mexico for this type of works. And before we forget, let's talk a little about who else was on stage that day. The cast. The very famous tenor, Italian tenor, of course, Carlo del Monaco. Carlo del Monaco is very well known for having in his repertory those very heavy roles for tenor. So it was Carlo del Monaco. Of course, if you know and if you have read about, or if you are very interested in the opera, you already know that Carlo del Monaco had an ego that was almost as big as his voice, or maybe his ego was even bigger. You will see why I need to mention that. We also have Giuseppe Taddei in the also very interesting role of Amonasro. And last but not least, I wanted to leave here as the last person to mention in the cast, because I will be keeping most of my focus in this conversation around the incredible mezzo-soprano. Personally, I am one of the guys who think that Maestra Oralia Dominguez was rather a contralto. You know that people who love music like to have these endless discussions about whether the tessitura of a given singer is this or that, and basically we lose too much time in trying to see who is right and who is wrong, so we will not waste any more time talking about whether she was a contralto or a mezzo. The true, for me, and I need to remark it now, for me, the absolute true star of that day was not Callas, was not Del Monaco, was not Taddei, was Oralia Dominguez, and I will explain it later. Later, it is not just a matter of me being Mexican and wanted to promote the Mexican singer Oralia Dominguez. I will be explaining that a little later. Okay, so, but if you're familiar with the history of opera, if you're familiar with Maria Callas, you already know that that day, not the first time, but that day, I was telling you, in 1951, Maria Callas returned to Mexico, sang a few other roles, And she sang in Aida this hyper-famous E-flat. How important is it that the note was a high an E-flat? Well, it really depends. It really depends on how much you know about music and how much you like that sound. But is it relevant? In a way, yes. I will talk about it a little later. And in a way, not. Why? Let me explain why not. I think people are paying way too much attention to a single note. We are having a four acts opera with great singers on stage, with great music, with a ballet, with a chorus, and people tend to remember that day only because on an E-flat. Had it ever been done in the past? Yes, I will refer it in a second. Has it happened later? Yes. Nobody even remembers who the singer or the few singers who have tried that. They have not been that famous. But is it even fair to judge or to think of a given day of Aida only because the singer sang in E flat? And at this point you might be telling, yes, but it was Callas and because of this, of this, of this. Let me state it right now. I think the E flat was nothing but what we call now fan service. You know, people want to listen for the very first time. This note, I will do it there. If you're wondering whether, because there are way too many things have been said around that E flat that are the result of. I don't want to say it this hard, but let's say it's about ignorance, being ignorant about there are higher notes. An E flat is not the higher note that a female voice can reach. There are much higher notes, not many, but there are higher notes that given voices can sing. So it was not a top note. That it was interesting, yes. I will be giving more details around that. So around the myth about the ignorance and around many things, I think this has been a little exaggerated or maybe too exaggerated. Because I was telling you, Maria del Monaco, Giuseppe and Oralia were singing, wow. It's for me, and the reason why I am bringing today's note, it's not only because the E-flat, but because I don't think you will ever hear anywhere, I don't think it will ever be repeated. If you have the chance of looking for it in YouTube, it is also in Spotify. If you're wondering, in your country, I'm not sure, but I think that you can find it if you look for it. You can hear to that E-flat in a complete version. But pay attention to the whole representation that day. It was amazing. It was incredible. Absolutely out of any possible time being repeated what we were listening now in the recordings. So why keeping our focus only on a note when the whole representation was just electrifying, right? So in that electrifying environment on that stage that I will refer very often today, I also wanted to tell you that there are several anecdotes around that that episode in the history of opera. People say that because the previous year with the German tenor Kurt Baum, she was having lots of trouble because, you know how tenors can be. Tenors like to show off, no secret to anybody. That tenors like to show off, and he was exaggerating everything, keeping his notes for much longer. So Maria, that's one of the anecdotes, Maria got very mad, and so she tried or she wanted to give this guy a lesson, to Kurt Baum, the tenor, and so she went for this high note at the end of the concertante of the second act. That's one of the anecdotes around it. Another anecdote has to do with, and I would like to believe that this is true, I read an interview or an article in a newspaper that says that year, 1951, Maria visited, I want to recall something, Angela Peralta was a very famous soprano of the former century. She started singing in the 1800s. She was also known in Spanish as the Ruiseñor Mexicano. You can look for information around Ángela Peralta, and the things they say about Ángela is that her voice was just incredible. Great melody, great volume, great technique, absolutely stunning notes. So Ángela Peralta was a history herself. And so when Maria was in Mexico, she learned about Ángela Peralta, and the anecdote says that she visited some relatives of Ángela Peralta of hers, asked for permission to go over some pictures and things that had belonged to Ángela Peralta. And this is a very lovely anecdote, because one can really think, because of, if you are aware of the personality of Maria Callas, you know that she was a very committed artist. So personally, I like to think that this anecdote is true. I can really think that Maria Callas took a couple of hours, found out who the relatives of Ángela Peralta were, and being aware that Ángela Peralta had sung Aida, she wanted to learn or to try something herself. Not to replicate or imitate Ángela Peralta, but, you know, just to put Maria to put herself in the mood of what the lovely Ángela Peralta could have done in the past. Anecdotes here, anecdotes there, whether yes or whether not, it's part of the history, it's part of the things that people like to believe, either or not. So that's what it is. But now, let me tell you something. Today, I will not be giving you as many details as I did last time on all the history of the opera, because Aida is very long. I already said 4 acts. But I will be talking a little more about the passages. So, first things first. What is the first aria, or the very first well-known piece of this Aida? And it is very difficult for the tenor. It starts with Se qual guerriero fossi se il mio sogno si avverasse, and yes, it is the very, 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 very famous Celeste Aida. Radames, the tenor, is singing this song to her very much loved Aida. And I am referring to this passage because I was telling you that this was an electrifying atmosphere in the air on that representation of Aida, because from the very beginning, you notice that all singers are competing. They are competing to demonstrate that they are in such a positive way in their voice, then they deserve the applause, that they need to call all the attention. What does this result in? It results in, and we need to be very clear about that, all notes in duration, and in the case of the E flat, exaggerated above of what is written, but most of the notes are kept for much longer than necessary. From that perspective, all this exaggeration leads exactly to that. It is an exaggerated performance of Aida. We cannot say it is pure music, pure musical, very artistic. It is just an exaggeration for singers to demonstrate what they are capable of. So if you put that aside and you want to enjoy pyrotechnics, you really need to listen to the complete 1951 Aida in Mexico City. Keeping that in mind, and keeping in mind that Carlo del Monaco was himself a very, I said it before, Carlo del Monaco's ego was even much bigger than his voice. But don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying he was a bad singer. Personally, I like the color and the power of his voice. And he knew how to use it. And do you think he was willing to accept to be left a step behind by the not yet very well-known Maria Meneghini Callas? Of course not. He was more than ready to compete. And with that in mind, so he starts with Se qual guerriero fossi celeste Aida. And I am going to say something that I know will start bringing me some bad comments. I know many people will not agree, but this is what these are my thoughts. I really don't like Celeste Aida. Personally, I prefer to listen to many other melodies by Maestro Giuseppe Verdi rather than Celeste Aida. And for that reason, I will not devote much more time on the first famous number, the Celeste Aida. No, don't like it. Sorry. Sorry. Sorry, people. If you like it, I respect that. I respect that you like it. Hope that you respect that I don't. So that's how we meet Radamés with his Celeste Aida. But after learning that Radamés will be sent to war against the Egyptians, Aida is now on stage, and now the second very famous number there is the Ritorna Vincitore dal mio labbrusci l'empia parola. Because remember that there here it is, Aida is torn between two things. The love for Radamés, but one being Ethiop and the other being Egyptian, they are in fact in opposite sides in this war conflict, but still she loves him. So by desiring him to come back, that means that his her people will lose the war, and that Aida understands, and that it's not fair. That's why she says that if he returns having a win, that means that his people have lost, her people have lost. At this point, you may notice that Maria was already in very good conditions that day. I already said that Mario del Monaco had already exaggerated part of his aria. Now it is Maria's time to exaggerate, to keep for longer several notes of the Ritorna Vincitor. You may hear by the applause both to Carlo del Monaco and to Maria, that people are giving that a warm applause, still not engaged by the two singers. So, but things keep heating up. And as things keep heating up, we hear now that we are moving ahead in the opera. And we have a, let me tell you something, I really love this scene, the scene of the consecration. Personally, I like it very much. You know, when it starts with the priestesses, and there is the high priestess singing, Possente, possente, efto del mondo spirito animator. It mixes with the rest of the female core. Noi ti invochiamo. And I really love that scene. I find it very sublime, if you allow me to share that comment. After that, I need to say something. Also keep in mind that this partitura, this composition by Maestro Verdi, has, I would say, a political motivation. It was an opera that Verdi was paid for. So you can find also the motivations for that inauguration of that channel that motivates that Verdi is being paid, but blah, 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 putting these things aside. That explains the grandiosity of the performances on a stage of this opera. That is why we have a ballet. That's why we have this very, very powerful male and female chorus. That's why we have all this, you know, resplendent orchestration and powerful voices on the stage. I need to say at this point that Aida is not to be sung by just any singer. With that heavy orchestration, it really needs powerful spinto, at least spinto voices, to be able to be heard above the orchestra. In fact, we are going to hear it exactly in that famous E flat that we are about to detail. Okay, so right after that beautiful, amazingly beautiful consecration scene, where Ramphis, one of the priests or the lead of the priest, sings, Radames sings, the female chorus sings. After having wrapped up that part, we are moving now to the second act, where there is the first confrontation between Aida and Amneris. I'm going to take a time now to talk about Oralia Dominguez. Maestra Oralia Dominguez, this stunning Mexican singer, was still very young by the time she sang it that day. She was barely 26 years. She had had her debut at the Palacio de Bellas Artes the prior year. So, in terms of experience, she had very little experience. And you know that for a voice of this type, she is still very young. But from the very beginning, you hear Maestra Oralia Dominguez sing. You don't hear a 26 years young lady. From my perspective, I am listening to a singer who has been on stage for a good number of years already. Not because her voice sounds old, but because she's so secure of herself. I insist, Maria Meneghini Callas was still not La Callas. But Maria Callas had a very powerful voice then. An international singer coming to Mexico City, the very young Amneris, sung by Maestra Oralia Dominguez, and she's not left behind at any time during that day. From the very first beginning and from the very first note, you hear her powerful voice, that beautiful pasta. Oralia Dominguez had a voice, had lots of pasta. So you listen to that pasta in her voice, the power, the volume, the musicality itself, herself she had. And you notice that at no time she doubted of giving the best she had. So she said, okay, I have this confrontation scene with Aida, with Maria Meneghini Callas, but I am not being left behind. I am putting everything in there. I invite you, if you are going to listen to this whole representation, to go and pay attention to that duet. Our Amneris, and if you have also paid attention to the libretto, there would be no Aida if we had no Amneris. She's a very good in the sense that she's a very powerful character on stage. No Amneris, there is no Aida. There is no conflict that guides the whole opera. It would lose power. And that Maestro Verdi knew. And that's why Amneris is a very, very powerful character on stage. And this duet is happening right after, they announce that Radames is coming back in victory. So there is a celebration there. And I was telling you, at no time did Maestra Oralia Dominguez step back. And by the wrapping of this duet, of this confrontation duet, when she says, A la pompa que s'apresta me cosquiava sisterai, tu prostrata nella polvere, io sul trono accanto al re. Which means, there is a celebration that is starting soon. I will be a part of it while you are still there in the dust. I will be sitting by the king while you are still there, you know, in mud, if we could say. So with that, Amneris is demonstrating her authority against Aida, in this case Maria Meneghini Callas. But keep in mind that I want to insist that you really pay attention to the whole performance, the four acts. Even forget about the E-flat and pay attention to this duet. At this time, you may already discover that Maestra Oralia Dominguez at her 26 years was just amazing. And after this duet comes what people like the most. Comes this scene, because it's a very long scene, where we have the celebration, the arrival of the winners, Radames, and it is usually on stage very, very interesting. If you have seen Aida earlier, you may know what I'm talking about. If you have not, I invite you to watch a complete performance of this scene when there is a celebration, and we're reaching the point that everybody would like to talk about, that famous E flat. Was Maria upset with Mr. Kurt Bohm, the German tenor, the previous year, for him overdoing and trying to show off? Was she trying to repeat the same high note Maestra Angela Peralta had sung in the past? She did it just as a fan service, and you know, to demonstrate she could be reaching or being even more famous worldwide? Maybe, most likely. Personally, I like to think that it is more motivated by a fan service of showing off what she could do. But still, in the case, what happens there? Since people only cares about the E-flat, let me tell you why I say that it is not secondary. I'm not saying don't pay attention to that note, because personally, I think that it is a vocal achievement in the sense of pyrotechnics. The choir is singing very loud. The other singers are singing very loud. It is a concertante, and the volume is fortissimo. So, fortissimo, the sound of the orchestra. The other singers singing quite loud. For people who know the ending of this concertante, know that already Aida and Radames have been singing throughout that ending, singing three or four times some B-flats or A's. I'm not sure if they are A's or B-flats, but they are singing and there. So by that time, the environment is so electrifying that you really don't know what can happen next, you know? There is a chord, and there is the sound of the orchestra, and there are the other singers, and it is Aida and Radames singing all those high notes. And by the end, if you're wondering what an E flat sounds like, and I hope that there will not be a dozen people chasing me it for copyright violation, because you will only hear to those notes, to the E flat. This is what an E flat sounds like. But please keep in mind, the orchestra was coming from full volume. The singers had been on stage already for a good number of minutes there. Maria and Carlo del Monaco have been singing along or their parts that are theirs, singing high notes already, and we're wrapping up the scene, and people, without expecting anything, listen to this. And this is absolutely amazing, because you can hear, I was telling you, it is a vocal achievement, because you can clearly hear that EB above everything else, and this is what it sounds like. That is a high note. Have people tried it in the past? Yes, there is an anecdote that Angela Peralta did it in the past. Have people tried it later? Yes, I am not going to give the names of the sopranos who have tried it. But to sing it with this level of sound, with this amplitude, with a very secure note, I was telling you, I don't think we will ever see it repeated on stage. And to have a cast this strong ever again on stage, that's not going to happen either. Sorry, but I really don't think that's going to happen again. And if you hear, please, sorry to insist, if you hear to the whole recording of that 1951 Tosca, sorry, apologies, Aida, Mexico City, you will notice that right after this, people really went mad. The whole Palacio de Bellas Artes was falling apart with the applause. People didn't expect that to happen, and so this was just crazy. It feels even more electrifying. Later, we are running to the following act, and now Amneris and Ramfis, keep in mind that Amneris is marrying to Radames, that victorious general, Egyptian general, marrying to the princess, and so Amneris is going to be praying to their gods the whole night as part of their practices before getting married. And so it arrives Aida and sings. At this point, when Aida is back on stage, which means Maria Meneghini Calas, people are already crazy about what they heard with that E-flat. So when she sings her "O Patria Mia, My Pew, My Pew, Ti Rivedrò," that very beautiful aria, she knows that she cannot step back either. So people are already enchanted, electrified by Maria's power and voice. So she does again what I have been telling you today. Notes are being kept for much longer, way too much longer. Remember, I was telling you that this 1951 Saida is interesting in the sense of acrobatics and vocal power, but not in artistic result. So this aria is not particularly artistic because everything is exaggerated. But people don't care. For fan service, people just wanted to clap, right? Still, this aria is very beautiful. You may know the melody. Ofresche valio questo silveato che un di promesso dall'amor mi fu, or che d'amore il sogno dileguato. O patria mia, non ti vedrò mai più. O patria mia, non ti vedrò mai più. No, no, non ti vedrò mai più. So Aida is singing here to her country, I will never ever see you again. She knows she's a slave, and she knows that her people lost the war. So that's how her sadness is transmitted in this O Patria Mia. But by that time, enters Giuseppe Taddei. And remember, I was telling you that no singer on stage wanted to be left behind. So by the time Amonasro, or Giuseppe Taddei, joins on stage and starts the duet with Aida, you know the "C'el mio padre." This is very interesting because Amonasro, I was telling you, he didn't want to be left behind. So now Amonasro, Giuseppe Taddei, is again also exaggerating the notes, keeping them for much longer. And so this duet, if we change the T of duet, becomes a duel. It is a duel between Aida and Amonasro, because he joins and says, "A te grave cagion m'adoce Aida, nulla sfugge al mio sguardo, d'amor distruggi per Radames, e tama quella tendi, dei farò la fine a tuo rivale, razza infame, amorrita, e a noi fatale." Of course he's upset, and it is somehow justified because of the mood of what is going to happen. But let's admit it, Giuseppe is exaggerating. Giuseppe is keeping the notes for much longer. And so Aida goes her turn in this that I like to call duel. Giuseppe Taddei is not keeping anything for himself. In this duet, in this act even, Amonasro is so out of this world also. Giuseppe is singing greatly. Again, I would like to invite you to look for the recording and pay attention to how Giuseppe is singing everything, this confrontation with her and daughter, convincing her of getting a secret from Radames, and at the end convincing her. He has threatened Aida, he has in a way blackmailed, and has put too much stress on the scene. You may be aware, you may be familiar of the part when he says, when Aida has said, "No, no, jamai," and then Monastro gets mad and says, "Sodonque quest'orgia tragizia, corti e colte, fulconstruggete le nostre città, spargiate il terrore, le stragi, le morti, al vostro furore, più freddo non va." Of course, I'm not doing that as Giuseppe. I'm not a baritone, and I'm not even close to have a voice a tenth of powerful and nice as Giuseppe Taddei's, but just try to picture it with a powerful baritone voice. Spargiate il terrore, le stragi, le morti, al vostro furor, che freno non va. And then it has Maria. Oh, padre, padre, mia figlia ti chiami, pietà, pietà, pietà. Flutti di sangue scorrono sulle città dei vinti. Vedi dai neri vortici si levano le stinti. Ti aritoressi e gridano. Per te la patria mora. Then it goes Maria. Pietà, pietà, padre, pietà. Then he goes again. Una larva orribile fra l'ombra noi s'affaccia, trema le scarne abbraccia. And then Maria. Ah, and padre, no, no. And that is why this duet is so electrifying and interesting. And now, as he has convinced Aida to betray Amonasro, she leaves the stage, but now arrives Radames, and there is another duet that is in fact a duel, because now remember that Aida, Maria Meneghini, has already sang this E flat that made the whole Palacio de Bellas Artes go absolutely mad. And Mario del Monaco is very upset because he wants people to give him an applause as powerful as the one that was given to Maria. So from the very, very beginning in this duel, he's again keeping the notes for much longer. And of course, Maria accepts the duel. And so this duel, usually called Pur ti rivego mia dolce Aida, this duel that is in fact a very long duet, I'm sure you will never hear another recording or representation on stage this powerful. It takes the voice of a young Maria Meneghini Callas and the voice of Maestro Mario del Monaco to be able to sing it like this. If you are a singer yourself, or if you have heard renditions by Pavarotti, Kaufman, or I don't know any other famous more recent tenor, you will know that the A's sung in this duet are not to be kept for very much long, because it's a very difficult duet. But both Maria and Mario del Monaco go for the challenge, keeping their volumes to the most powerful fortissimo they can, and keeping those long notes. There is a part in this duet, and I am trying to find it because I don't want to tell you something wrong. Right after they have said, Maria Meneghini, in this case, Aida, has proposed that they both leave the lands of Egypt and go and live somewhere else. That is Fujamo. And she says Fujamo, and then Aida says Tunamami va, and Radames replies Lontano mortan jamai nadio arse l'amor al par del mio possente, and then Aida replies va va tatendi all'arneris, and Radames replies no jamai, and then Aida again trying to convince him jamai chesti. Allor piombe la scuola su me, sul padre. And then she says, when she says sul padre mio, she says, okay, if we are going to stay here, then me, my people, and my father will perish. And that's when Radames starts the most difficult part of the duel, saying, Anno facciamo se vogliam da queste mura all'eserto insieme foggiamo qui sol regna la sventura la si schiude un ciel d'amor i deserti interminati a noi tala saranno. Pay attention to Dalamo, because it is kept for much longer than it what it is written, but keep in mind that Mario is challenging Maria Callas. So, vino solo la strimilero no, di più limpido fulgor. Of course, Aida or Maria Callas accept the challenge in this part of the duet, and in the same phrasing, when she is nella terra venturata dei miei padri in ciel attendi ivi laura imbalsamata ivi il suo aromi e fior fresche vali e verdi prati a noi tallamo. Again, keeping the note for much longer than written. Solo I lastri brillaranno di più limpido fulgor, showing that she will not be left behind the voice of Mario del Monaco's, and then they join the two of their voices together, because now they have to sing the same phrases. Vieneme coinsiem fuggiamo questa terra di dolor, viene meco tamo tamo a noi dolce fia l'amor fia. Till that very last note, none of the two of them stepped back, and that's how it wraps actually their duet. That's when Aida gets the secret from Radames. Amneris gets back on stage along with Ramphis, and they find out that Radames has revealed that secret of war. So Radames is called Traditore. Aida wants to defend Radames, and Amonasro flees the place with the secret. And this is something that not many people pay attention, but the way Mario del Monaco wraps up this third act is also out of this world. He has already sung a good number of A's and B flats in this wrapping of the stage, and now the final things he sings is Sacerdote, io resto a te, again with very powerful music in the background, and he keeps the notes like forever like this. And when I say like this, I'm not saying that I am doing it like Carlo. I'm just trying to give you a hint on what parts to pay attention to if you really, 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 really listen to the whole recording of this 1951's Aida in Mexico City. So I was telling you that he's going to be punished for having betrayed Egypt. So he wraps up, he delivers his sword to the sumo sacerdote Ramses and says, "Sacerdote, after the tan, then you listen to the orchestra, tan ta ra ta 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 tan ta ra ta 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 tan 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 tan. So from my perspective, if you ask me, the E flat by Maria Callas is impressive because of what I told you, but this wrapping of an A by Radames by Carlo del Monaco is, for to me, even more impressive because it fits perfectly in this electrifying environment that we have had already. Now it's time to dedicate minutes to talking about the whole scene by Maestra Aurelia Dominguez, Amneris on that day. If you're aware of the opera, if you're of the plot of this opera, if you know singing, if you sing yourself, you're a singer yourself, you know that the role by Amneris is a very difficult one, and it takes a great singer to undertake the Amneris role. I've been insisting that Maestra Aurelia Dominguez really, really, really did an amazing job. I would like to insist again that everybody knows Carlo del Monaco. Everybody knows the power of his voice. Now everybody knows about Maria Meneghini Callas. But what Maestra Aurelia Dominguez did on that day really needs to be acknowledged. On that fourth act, the scene by Amneris that which starts, and it is a very, very long scene. So it is not only difficult, but it is a very, very long scene because it starts with La borrita arriva, le mes fuggia. Dai sacerdoti Radames attende dai traditor la pena. Traditore lienone. That's how it starts, and right after being here on stage, she asks Radames to be brought to her presence. And then we have another duet that is going to be called a duel. Now keep in mind that the very young Aurelia Dominguez is facing one of the most powerful voices in the tenor tessitura, Mario del Monaco. She's in this duel facing one of the most powerful tenor voices of history. And she again does not step back. The first part of that duel does not have too much of that confrontation in terms of volume of and vocal power. But there is a point where we reach this confrontation because Radames wants to keep and insist on his love for Aida, and Amneris wants Radames to put Aida aside. So she is offering, "I am offering you to be safe if you leave Aida." But Radames does not want it to happen. And so the scene, the Amneris says, "Mas io ti salva, giurami che più non la vedrai." So if I save you, then you will never see here again. And Radames says, "No, non posso." And there is this insistence by Amneris. A lei rinuncia per sempre e tu vivrai. Then Radames says again, non posso. Ancora una volta a lei rinuncia. And Radames says again, è vano. No, he will not leave Aida. Of course, this is making Amneris more and more desperate and upset. And says, "Morir voy a un puensano." Y en Radames says, "Pronto morir son ya." Okay, I am ready to die. And she says, "Que te salva ya un rato da la sorte que te aspeta y fuera de tu canchato un amor que igual no la de miei pianti la vedetta o la cer si compirà. De miei pianti la vendetta o l'arcia." And with this, what I want to exemplify, and again insist on you to listen to the whole performance and to this scene by Amneris, is that Aurelia knows that she's facing a great tenor, a very powerful tenor, and that all singers have kept their notes for much longer. So what she does, she keeps the notes longer herself, showing that she's a very powerful voice and that she has everything there to be part of the cast that day. There comes this part when each is telling their parts. De me pianti la vendetta ora c'è. And while the tenor is singing, "Gaudi mensi il cor avrà l'ira umana, più non temo, temo sola tua pietà." Because he's saying that he's not afraid of any other thing than of the mercy of the one that is trying to save him. So he's more afraid of Amneris' mercy than of death. Of course, that drives Amneris even crazier. So they wrap up this duet when he says, "Lir humana più non temo, temo sol la tua pietà." At the same time, Amneris is saying, "Or dal ciel si compirà." So they both keep that G for much longer, and again with a very bright orchestration by Giuseppe Verdi, this scene is ending. And this is how, and from my perspective again, and I don't want to say that there are no other splendid Amnerises that we have heard, but I want to insist that Maestra Aurelia Dominguez really deserved her place on that cast. I have nothing that I don't like in this recording on how Maestra Aurelia Dominguez, she was doing it live. Mario del Monaco, of course, we know he can do it. Maria Callas, of course, we know she can do it. Giuseppe Taddei, of course, we know he can do it. But nobody really knew Maestra Aurelia Dominguez, and now we all learned that she could really do it herself. I would really, really, really like to say that Maestra Aurelia Dominguez and the recordings she did later, also with Renata Tebaldi in Europe, are a good proof of the level of artistry that she has. Moving on to the final part, or the final scene. Oh, sorry, not the final scene yet. We still have the judgment scene. And this is... remember that Amneris has been on stage for almost 10 minutes already, and she has to wrap it up by learning that Radames will be buried alive. He will die still alive. Of course, if he dies, it's because he was still alive, sir. That's kind of obvious. And this is a very interesting wrapping part of Maestra Aurelia Dominguez, because She's again alone on stage after many minutes being seen having had a duel with one of the most powerful tenor voices in the history of opera. She has learned that Radames will die, will be buried still alive. And so she says, "A lui vivo la tomba, all infami, né di sangue son paghi jamai, e si chiaman ministri del ciel." So you will bury him alive, oh infami, and you call and you will never be paid. Is not there is no way you can have enough blood? You that call yourselves that you serve the gods in heaven. So it goes like, "A lui vivo la tomba, all infami, neri sangue son paghi jamai, e si chiaman ministri dal cielo." And if you know the scene, it goes very dark melodramatic music with the male chore, "Traditor, traditor, traditor," and then it goes back to Amneris, "Sacerdoti compisti un delitto, tigri infami di sangue assetate, voi la terra dei nomi altracciate, voi polito di colpe non ha." And you also hear again the voices of Ramphis, "E traditor mora, sacerdote, quest'uomo che uccidi, tu lo sai, da me un giorno fu amato, l'anatema del cuore straziato, col suo sangue sul terri cadrà." And it goes again, still the mix of the voice of Afneris being so upset, so desperate, that the man she loves will be killed. And still the voices of the female voices of the priests saying, "Morra e traditor, morra, morra e traditor, morra." And she's saying, "Allo, allo, allo, non è traditor, pietà, pietà, pietà." By the end of this scene, of this very splendid scene, I think this is the greatest scene for a mezzo, when she says, "Empia razza anatema su voi, la vendetta del ciel scenderà, scenderà anatema su voi." "Impious priesthood, curses light on you all, on your heads heaven's vengeance, vengeance will be over you."
"Empia razza anatema su voi, la vendetta dal ciel scenderà anatema su voi."
And you know, again, we have this very splendid orchestration by Maestro Giuseppe Verdi, and that's how it ends. To me, the most astonishingly spectacular scene for a mezzo soprano. This case, Amneris, and Remember. Sorry to be so repetitive, and the very splendid work that Maestra Oralia Dominguez did on that day. What do we have left? We have the final duet by Aida and Radames. She has decided to join him now that he will be buried still alive. They meet there in their final hours, are together. They sing a very lovely duet. I like this duet, moreover, because these are two powerful voices, at least two spinto voices. And Maestro Verdi wrote a very lovely melody for them both, in special the where they say, Sogno di Gaudio che in dolor svani. A noi si schiode il ciel, si schioda il ciel e l'alme erranti volano al rancio delle At this point, if you know the duets already, you know that there is this choir singing, and also there is the mix of the of Agnelis' voice. On one hand, you have the chorus, Noi t'invochiam imensofta. By the time Aida and Radames have finally been buried behind this stone wall, there is only the voice of Amneris, very sad because she has lost the man she loves, and she says, Ah, pace t'imploro. Pace t'imploro, pace, pace, pace. And with a very beautiful sound of the violins in the orchestra ends up Aida, that 1951 Mexico City Palacio de Bellas Artes with Maria Meneghini Calas, Mario del Monaco, Giuseppe Taddei, and our great maestra Oralia Dominguez. Thank you very much. I will be seeing you hopefully sometime very soon.
We are posting more content in our profile in Ko-fi. You can find us there as Opera We Love Singing, all in one word. So go to Ko-fi, K as in key, O as in opera, dash, F as in food, and I as in ice. We love to see you there.